and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is singer-songwriter Joe Crookston. Crookston was voted the 2008 Falcon Ridge Top 3 Most Wanted Artist and was featured in the annual Falcon Ridge Preview Tour in May. He was the Great American Song Contest Honor Award winner, and in 2007 he received a year-long songwriting grant from the Rockefeller Foundation to travel throughout New York State and interview locals and write songs about the stories. The result was his stunning new CD called Abel Baker, Charlie and Dog. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Tish. Great to be back.
Now, when we talked last time on the show, you touched on the influence of your mother, who was also into music and writing. But we didn't talk about the fact that you were born and raised in rural Ohio. Talk to us about how that's influenced your writing.
Oh, yeah. I grew up in Northeast Ohio. I was a dairy farmer, actually, for a good part of my growing up. And how that influenced me, I actually grew up listening to a lot of Eastern European music growing up. That was huge in Northeast Ohio. You have German, Polish. So I grew up listening to the accordion, polka music, a lot of polkas, a lot of just, you know, it was music that was, I guess, you know, folk music, but it was about people dancing. It was about two chords, you know, it was music with two chords and a good beat.
Uh-huh.
So basically I'd come home from church on Sunday morning and the first thing we did was we'd put on polka varieties and I'd sit there with my grandpa Joe and he'd be chain smoking and we'd watch polka varieties. And for me, it was just like that every Sunday that happened to me, just absorbing that music and the simplicity of it in a way. There's a very simple, you know, the simple quality to the polkas. From there, I also think that I'm a rural boy. You know, I worked on dairy farms. I got up at 4 in the morning and watched the sunrise how many days in my youth. And the smell of, you know, cow manure and, you know what I mean?
Like, that's in your blood.
It's in my blood, you know. And so for me, I moved away. I lived in Philadelphia. I lived in Seattle in these more intense, you know, urban situations. And I can still very much hear in my music this combination of the earth and the rolling hills and the dirt and the manure and the rural quality. And then I also have this other side of me, which is much more urban and angular, and it has stories that are more urban. And the two of them, to me, I'm looking back now and seeing how those really fuse together.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I can see that too.
Yeah.
Especially the storytelling and the simplistic but complicated way that you write. It's such beautiful writing, I must say.
Yeah, thanks.
Now, you know what else I want to talk to you about? You're one of the few singer-songwriters in the folk genre who doesn't write self-involved relationship breakup songs. Did you consciously stay away from that, or are you just not interested in that?
That's a really good question. I would say I consciously stayed away from it. I think the songwriters that most inspired me first, when I went to the Kent State Folk Festival back in 1987 and I heard someone like John McCutcheon, the Horseflies, the songwriters that most moved me were the ones that were singing about us as a whole. You know, there was a collective commentary. It was music and writing that was about us as people and not about my girlfriend and we broke up and you're all supposed to care. I'm going to whine about it and you're all supposed to care.
But you don't have any songs like that.
I don't. And I'm due for a couple there.
Do you think so?
The truthful answer to that is that I think I have shied away from it because I haven't found it that interesting. And I found more power. I just gravitate towards songs that tell stories.
Yeah, and
about
social commentary.
Yeah, when people come up to me and say, like, that song about your grandfather and based on Tinian Island during World War II, I just related to that so much. And they've never been in the Army or the Air Force, or, you know, but they could somehow connect with the humanity of the song. Is like there's something very universal, and they'll say it's so universal. To me, that's the greatest compliment that I get as a songwriter, when these story songs touch deeply many different people.
Mm-hmm.
I just find it a more challenging, more interesting art form is when I can delve into these stories. But when I say I'm due for a couple, I think my latest CD was very story-oriented, telling other people's stories, allowing, you know, helping their stories be heard.
Uh-huh.
And I think I'm due on my next recording and my next project as I move forward artistically is to kind of find out what are more of my own stories and put those out in an interesting way. So
but
that's
you had
my
some
challenge.
Of your own stories, didn't you, in your first CD?
Yeah.
Fall Down as the Rain.
A few more.
Uh-huh.
So I think that, you know, I'm going to explore my own stories a little bit and do that in a way that's not self-indulgent.
Joe Crookston channels Tony Bennett, perhaps. Now, let's talk about your year-long adventure where you traveled around the Finger Lakes in New York and started compiling stories and talking to people. Talk to us about that.
Okay. It was a fantastic project. 14 months long. I visited all the Finger Lakes and all the small towns around the Finger Lakes. I met, you know, many people, some that I spent days with interviewing and talking to, just, you know, maybe not as formally as we're talking right now, but I would sit down at their kitchen table and just go through their scrapbooks, and they would show me pictures of their wedding and about their farm that they used to have, and, you know, stories. And to me, it was all about, I use this little phrase, like a social archaeologist. I think I'm just fascinated by people. And I imagine, Tish, you are, you know, the way you sit
Absolutely.
And talk to people, and you get these nuggets of truth and nuggets of stories and humor and whatnot in people that you interview. To me, that is why I did it. I wanted to go and learn. I wanted to learn about the physical landscape of the Finger Lakes, but I also wanted to learn about the emotional, social landscape of the Finger Lakes.
And how did you make the connections to meet these people?
Friends of friends would call me and say, hey, my grandfather lives in, you know, Alpine, New York, and he's an amazing man. You know, that actually happened. There was, you know, this guy I met, Walt Losey. A friend of mine, Mike Levy, called me one day and said, we're sitting here having dinner with our friend Bronwyn. Bronwyn's grandfather lives in Alpine, New York, and his family had a farm, and the neighbors had a whiskey still on the farm. And the neighbors, their whiskey still, they had roosters and chickens and horses and whatnot on their farm. And the roosters would go back and just get obliterated drunk eating fermented mash that was left over from this whiskey still. So they would throw the corn mash, you know, into a pile. And the roosters would go back there and just eat and eat until they were completely drunk. And then they would, you know, they're all clucking around. So I got in touch with Walt Losey, and we had a long conversation about this, told me these stories. And it was so funny. I was like, that needs to be told. That's just, you know, one of the funny stories.
Yeah.
So I wrote this, you know, Red Rooster in the Mash Pile.
Go ahead and play some of it.
Yeah, I'll play a little bit. Red Rooster in the Mash Pile, zinc cock a dock a dock a do. Well, the boys are making whiskey and the rooster's drinking too. Kind of like that. And then it goes on. It's sort of the swingy 1920s swing kind of a thing. So I would find out about him. I also made postcards. And people, the postcards basically told about the project. And on the back, it would say, if you have a story or something that you'd like to share, please contact Joe Crookston at that kind of thing. And I would, when I traveled, I would put them in libraries and I would put them in diners and wherever.
I see that.
And I would get emails all the time or phone calls from people saying, you know, my aunt, you know, lived in Germany and she came, you know, that kind of thing. And then they would connect me with them. Many of them I met, some I didn't have time. I have files full of people potentially to meet and connect.
Did you ever find anybody who said they didn't want you to write about their life?
You know what? That is a really good question. No. Nobody actually said to me, I don't want you to write about my life. There were more people who said, oh, yeah, I have these stories, but they're not that important. But my grandfather or my friend has these stories. And I'd say, no. In fact, that happened. This is a great question. I met a guy. His name is Wayne Edkin, and he is a retired teacher up near Syracuse. And he kept mentioning to me that he knew some students and friends who had these wonderful stories. And while he was telling me about his wonderful friends who had these wonderful stories, he kept interjecting these wonderful stories. You know, and he kept like kind of hinting of you know, meeting one of the characters from Slaughterhouse-Five, a Kurt Vonnegut book, and how he met him in a bar, and then he would go on to these other people who had these great stories, and I'm like, no. Like,
let's focus.
We need
on,
to talk. How
yeah.
about you tell me, you know, that kind of thing. And I did that in a funny way or whatever. But I ended up spending several days with him in his living room, going through his books and his stories,
amazing.
He told me this great story. He told me didn't end up in a song, but he basically said that he was in a bar one night and sat down, and there was a TV going, and the Iraq war was beginning, and the bombing was happening. And the guy sitting next to him said, it looks a lot like Dresden. And so they started talking, and this guy at the bar ended up saying, you know, yep, I was in Dresden during the bombing during World War II. And really, you know, this and that. He said, and where were you at the time? Well, I was out hunkered down, and we basically, with about 10 other guys, we were in a place called, I think it was Slaughterhouse 5, is what the guy said. And so Wayne's ears perked up, and he said, have you ever Do you know the name Kurt Vonnegut? Oh, Kurt, I know. Oh, him, I know him. You know, like him and I, we were in there together. Blah blah. You know, they were war buddies.
Full circle.
And Wayne said, did you know that there's a book called Slaughterhouse-Five by Kurt Vonnegut? Never heard of it. The guy had never heard of it. So Wayne, as a teacher, invited this guy. They were reading Slaughterhouse-Five in his classroom. He invited this man into the classroom to talk about what it was like, and basically he was able to fill in details. You know what I mean?
That kind of circle for that man's life as well. Yeah.
And he eventually Wayne connected him with Kurt Vonnegut, and they, you know, hung out and basically
amazing.
So stuff like that. I'm like, Wayne, that's an amazing story. You know,
it is.
That's
it. No, I want to get you to play a song from Abel Baker, Charlie and Dog, and this is called John Jones. Can you want to tell us a little bit about it before you sing it?
Would love to. One thing, going back to your question about relationship songs, I really felt like a lot of what I did on this recording was to write relationship songs, but where there are characters in the songs that interrelate and have a relationship.
Uh-huh.
And rather than the whiny girlfriend breakup song, you know, like, this is actually like characters. And the two songs, this one here in particular, John Jones is singing and speaking to his mother, who is back on a plantation in Leesburg, Virginia. And John Jones escapes on foot, runs across the New York line, and settles in New York State in Elmira.
And John Jones was a slave.
Yeah, John Jones was a slave. And then eventually he helped in a little yellow house down in Elmira, not far from where we are right here. He freed some 800 or 900 slaves up to Canada through on the Underground Railroad.
Mm.
So this is John Jones, and he's singing kind of to his mama, who is back on the plantation. Mama, I'm gonna miss you, but I won't miss the plow. No more salt and tears and sweat upon my brow. I'm leaving Virginia, gonna get away somehow. Mama, I'm gonna miss you, but I won't miss the plow. Mama, I'm gonna miss you, but I won't miss these chains. I crossed the Mason-Dixon line on that freedom train. No more sweat rolling down like muddy rain. Mama, I'm gonna miss you, but I won't miss these chains. Bended back, dusty plains, shackled in rusty chains. Heavy stones, ragged bones, run, 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 John Jones. Mama, I made it across the New York line, and the thing that nearly killed me was leaving you behind. 300 miles now and freedom is mine. Mama, I made it across the New York line. Now I'm working here in these New York hills, digging graves and cutting wood for the lumber mill. I don't work for free now, they give me dollar bills. Mama, there's a northbound train heading for these hills. 300 miles free at last, running from a dusty past. Tombstones all alone, far, far from home, John Jones. Mama, I pray the word gets down to you. Take the 4 a.m. northern train and meet the baggage crew. Whisper Elmira, they'll know what to do.
Dear God, if you make it, I'll be waiting here for you. Mama, I miss you, but I don't miss the plow. No more salt and tears and sweat up on my brow. Long gone, Virginia, I'm a free man now. Mama, I miss you, but I don't miss the plow. 4 a.m., being brave, baggage car and freeing slaves. Elmira Railroad all alone. Far, far from home, John Jones.
Wonderful.
John Jones.
What a great song. How did you uncover that song? Did you talk to some relatives of this man?
I actually met a guy named Jim Cunningham down in Waverly, New York. And he contacted me and said, have you ever thought about writing a song about John Jones? And who's John Jones?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so him and I actually spent a couple days down in Elmira at the Woodland Cemetery. And we visited the house where John Jones lived.
Wow.
We talked to people at the Elmira Historical Society. We walked, along the path of the Underground Railroad through Elmira.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And so we basically spent a lot of time researching. And, I would go home and, write up little notes. And, I had tons, like files of notes. And basically then... I just sat down one day, and for me, it was, again, about the relationship. It was about mom, this dialogue back and forth between John Jones and his mom. And I knew that I wanted that to be the anchor of the song in terms of so that it had some form to it. I wanted the form of it to be that
interaction. It's a great angle.
Yeah.
It's really touching.
Thanks.
Yeah.
But everything in there is true. I actually just got a call about 3 weeks ago. Hello, is this Joe Crookston? This is Nellie from the John Jones Museum. We are trying to start a John Jones Museum.
Wow.
And we heard about your song, and we would like to get copies of your CD, that kind of thing. So it was really wonderful.
That's great.
So she asked if I would, at some point when there is a museum, if I'd come down and play a concert or that kind of thing. And I'm like, sure, I'd love to.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so they were thrilled, I think, because... what he did as a slave, he actually not only helped free slaves, but he buried Confederate soldiers and very respectfully. So he was this man who basically, regardless of the fact that he was being treated the way he did, still buried Confederate slaves with honor in Elmira.
That's quite,
yeah. So
quite
he was
something.
A very, very,
he was heroic.
Heroic. Yeah.
Exactly.
And nobody knows him,
Now, I want to ask you this. Do you believe that the folk tradition, as it is in today's world, has a responsibility to make people think about social issues? Or do you think it's your responsibility mainly to be an entertainer?
Ah, well, that is an interesting question. Definitely not just to be an entertainer. No question about that at all. I love to be funny on stage. I love to have a great time, get people... but to me, the job that I'm there to do is so much deeper than that and so important to me. Like Red Rooster, everybody's having a great time.
Uh-huh.
But also in response to the way you phrased the question is to make people, how did you ask the question?
To make people think about social issues and social change,
right.
and even social activism.
Right. One thing that I feel very strongly about is... the storytelling allows me to present material to a listener, whether they're educated about the subject or not, a discerning listener. I'm able to present material to them without preaching to them. And to me, that personally is very important as it relates to politics and social justice and the morality of, I really think that telling an amazing story and allowing the audience members and the listener to deduce their own meaning out of that or morality out of that is, to me, very important to my art.
Mm-hmm. So you'll never be somebody like Bob Dylan who will write an absolutely anti-war song, an over-war song.
I don't think I'd say that I would never do that, but I think that I find my power mainly in doing it this way.
Mm-hmm.
To where people are moved deeply. They hear something and they're moved deeply by the story. it affects them. I have this song about Freddie the Falcon, this kid who's locked up in juvenile detention. And he's there, and his family life is pathetic and terrible. And one of the last lines is, I guess I done what everyone expected of me. And it's this sort of sense that the expectations that were placed on this kid were pretty low, they were self-fulfilling. And I think when people hear that, I'm not telling them that we should expect higher. You know, I'm not singing, you know, we should all expect a lot from each other. Do you know what I mean? That's my art form is much more people going, recognizing, shaking their heads and going, yes, when we expect low, when we, you know, demean, people live up to that.
Yeah, and so telling stories is a way to enact social change. It really is.
Absolutely.
Because it is universal, like you said earlier, and people can relate.
Absolutely.
And maybe even look at their own lives by recognizing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, is there a tug of war in you regarding your love for folk and how you connect with audiences, and your, you know, your desire probably to be known on a bigger stage? Because when you become famous, you do become inaccessible and people act strange around you.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that as somebody who I know has a love of connecting?
Yeah. that's a great question. I would say that there is a polarity that pulls against me. For instance, I just finished this weekend playing at the Falcon Ridge Folk Festival. There's probably 9,000 to 10,000 people there. You know, I'm playing on the main stage. Many, many, many people know me, and there's this sense of, hey, Joe, you know, and the best that I can say is that the more grounded and real I am with why I do this, the more that doesn't get weird, you know, the more grounded I am with, I play music to connect myself with other humans, to do this because I love it, and to just be real about it, I find that I don't get into some head trips about that kind of thing. But I do think that, you know, I love playing in a room for 50 people where we're singing together, where we're connecting, and we're, you know, I'm telling stories and people are laughing and we have this intimate relationship.
Uh-huh.
For me, being on stage in front of 3,000 people, it's a different thing. And it does, but I still try to bring that same authenticity to the best that I can. And intimacy.
You're very intimate on stage.
The best that I can.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But I would say it's probably a good problem for me to have. I want to grow and I want this to get bigger and I want to also stay really grounded at the same time. So I'm working on that,
Regular Joe meets the world. Can I have you sing another song from Abel Baker, Charlie and Dog? This one's called Blue Tattoo. Tell us about it.
Okay. This one just happens to be a woman who lives down in Elmira. Again, another Elmira song. And it's called Blue Tattoo. And it's from the perspective, I have a 4-year-old daughter. Her name's Josie. And I'm in the phase right now of, Papa, why? Or, you know, a lot of why questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I love them. And after a while, they can be tiring, as parents know. You know, it's just a lot. this song is a conversation between Dina Jacobson when she's, let's say, 29 years old and her 4-year-old daughter named Connie. And so Dina is now 87 years old.
Yes, my darling, yes, I used to be little just like you. And yes, I played with all the other kids too. Yes, my darling, yes, I used to be little like you. Well, darling, in a Polish town halfway around the world, I lived when I was just a girl on a farm in a Polish town halfway around the world. And I had you and a strong will. We made our home in these New York hills. You sailed with me, I sailed with you, with a leather suitcase. Everything was new. And that's a good question. We sailed to America because there was a war. And when you're older, I promise I'll tell you more. My sweet darling, we sailed to America because there was a war. What's a war? well. It's when people fight and things get really tough. That's all for now, I've answered enough. My sweet daughter, war is when things get really tough. In the New York Harbor, as the ship pulled in, I held you close, we were starting over again. You sailed with me, I sailed with you, with a leather suitcase. I was 22. And yes, I had a family, but some people came and took us from our farm. And yes, you're right, my dear. Yes, that's a tattoo on my arm. Had a family, but some people came and took us from our farm. And still I wonder, but I don't know why, I was a lucky one to leave alive. You sailed with me, I sailed with you, with a leather suitcase and this blue tattoo. Darling, please, no more questions today. Why don't you go out with the other kids and play? My sweet darling, no more questions today. I had you in a strong will. We made our home New York hills. You sailed with me, I sailed with you, with a leather suitcase and this blue tattoo.
Thank you so much, Joe. You know, we are almost out of time. Can you give some contact information? I really want people to go out and buy your CD.
Oh, great. Yes, joecrookston.com, C-R-O-O-K-S-T-O-N, joecrookston.com. Yeah, thank you so much.
Yes.
Thank you.
And go buy the CD, Abel Baker, Charlie and Dog. It's wonderful, Joe. Yeah. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Dish. Yeah, it's great to be here.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. We are supported in part by the Arts of the Southern Finger Lakes in Corning, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.